Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins four lines from the top of Daf Yud Gimel. Before beginning the actual Gemara, we glance in the margin where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads Gimel Deos Tanoim. We'll see three Tanaic opinions. Bedroshas haPasuk in explaining the following pasuk Umuala Mal Bashem v'chichesh bamisoi beinyan shvuas pikadon. This pasuk from Vayikra Perikay pasuk Chof Aleph comes from a section in the Torah dealing with a person who swears falsely. He swears denying having an entrusted item or money or something of value belonging to someone else, and then confesses. That's as far as the Torah's topic. And we indicate binyan shvuas become a kfiras moment, the denial of money, of having someone else's funds, biyachas lekotshim. And our focus is going to be, how does this pasuk relate to matters that are sanctified, holy matters, things dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash? What happens if someone was entrusted to watch someone's sacrifice and falsely denied? Is he also going to be the subject of this pasuk and the guilt requirements that are incurred? The Gemara Gufa Umuala Mal Bashem L'Rabois Kotshim Kalim Shema Moinu Divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Of course, when you see Gufa, that means that we're coming back to something that was mentioned previously, and in fact on Yud Beis Omid Beis we cited this as part of our discussion, where Rabbi Yossi Haglili understands that the Pasuk Umuala Mal Bashem, where one denies under oath having Kotshim Kalim, would be the same as someone denying under oath having someone's entrusted article. So that if someone had entrusted Mr. A, entrusted by Mr. B, Kotshim Kalim, light level sanctity sacrifices, and swore that he doesn't have it, and then it turns out that he does, so he's guilty of violating Shuas HaBikonon. Needless to say that the pasuk goes on to say v'chichesh bamiso, you're countering, you're denying something of your friend. Hence, if you deny, let us say, having someone's kotshim, high level sanctity sacrifice, then that would not be a violation of what this pasuk is describing, because kotshe kotshim is something that's exclusively in the realm of the Almighty, of the Beis HaMikdash, not a denial to your friend. Ben Azai Oimer, L'Rabois Es HaShlomim. The pasuk includes the peace offering. Abo Yossi ben Deistoy Omer lo Omar ben Azai elo bevachor bilvad. Abo Yossi qualifies ben Azai, saying that the pasuk includes only a bechor. A bechor is a firstborn male animal. It's in the realm of kotshim kalim. And as far as what does the pasuk include, so he has a very limited approach, only a bechor. The Gemara now quotes from the source, and we should note some structural elements. First of all, you see immediately there's an aleph, and if there's an aleph, there's got to be a beis. Later down on the page, and almost halfway down, the beis appears. And on the side of the Gemara, the aleph and beis are presented as Shnei Lishonos, two versions, Al Eze Bova Shel Abraisa Shayach Divrei Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan will be making a comment and will want to know which section of the Tanaic source is Rabbi Yochanan's comment going on. So we have version Aleph. A few lines from now you can see Rabbi Yochanan's name. And then we have version Beis. The bow tie that you see highlights the expression Lim'ute Mai, what is being excluded. And the use of the bow tie appears pretty much immediately, and then a few lines later in the second version, the second Losham. Omar Mar. Note that this is Loshen Aleph. Loshen Beis appears a few lines later, where you can see the squiggle underlined Ravina. And as we pointed out, the purpose of these two Lishonos is to figure what is, or to reflect the two points that Rabbi Yochanan is making. Either his point is made on Lashon 1, or his point is made with reference to Lashon number 2. So, we quote from the source, Omar Mar ben Azai Oymer, the Rabbi says HaShlomim, that the Pasuk includes Shlomim as being something that would subject one who swore falsely concerning having it, having someone else's shlomim in their possession. What is excluded? E lemal. Now the diamonds that you see are featured on the side. Shlovim levarer hashela shelamute mai. What are we excluding? So e lemal lemute bechor. If the thinking is to exclude bechor from the parsha of Shavuos Hashomrim, hashto mashlomim shutin in smicho nisochem utinufas chosav v'shoik. Mind you, the shlomim that have these special sacrificial requirements like smicha, the placing of the hands on the animal's head before slaughtering. Nesachim are the accompanying meal wine offerings. Tenufas choza v'shok, the waving of the choza and shok portions of the meat. And you say, even with all of these ritual aspects, you say, Amris Momon Bailamhu, that it is considered mundane, a form of personal holding. Bechor mi baya, the Bechor will then certainly be Momon Bailam. And the Bechor doesn't have these attributes or aspects to it. Rashi adds very importantly that the Bechor referred to is a Bechor outside the land of Israel, that's not even destined to being offered, as we saw in our previous shiur. So, concerning a bechor that's a bechutzlaretz, we don't say mishulchan gavoya kazochi, as we saw. And again, these are terms that we had in our previous shiur. It goes without saying that the bechor is considered the firstborn male animal outside the land of Israel. It's certainly considered a person's personal holding. Elo, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Limute, Meiser, Kidesanya. Meiser is a reference to Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema is a sacrifice that's given from the tenth of every animal born that particular year in a person's herd or flock. Rashi says, Limute, Meiser Behema, Shiafapi Shehu Korev Shlomim, even though it is offered as a korban shlomim, kinamrinam perik basi b'choros, afilu hochi lo havi mechayim momon bailim kishlomim. The Meiser Behema, however, is not, while still alive, viewed as momon bailim, like a regular peace offering. Kedisanya, we continue in the Gemara. B'chor, ne'mar lo tifte, b'v'chor, that is, regarding a b'chor, firstborn male animal, the Pasuk says, Lo Sifteh. It is not redeemed. It doesn't lend itself to being redeemed. Even if it gets a blemish, one doesn't redeem it. V'nimkar, tam, chai, Ubamum chai v'shochet. It can be sold while alive, unblemished, and if it receives a blemish, so it can be sold as such, as a while alive, or even slaughtered, even the meat. Of course, if it becomes blemished, it's not brought as a sacrifice. That is as far as a bechor is concerned. B'meiser ne'emar lo yigal. The pasuk says that v'eino nimkar, it cannot be sold. Lo chai v'lo shochet, lo tam v'lo balmum. There is a prohibition of selling a meiser behemo, even if it happens to be blemished, and even if it happens to have been slaughtered. So that you see that the meiser behemo has a special level of sanctity to it, putting it in a, we'll say, category unto itself. And hence, the meiser behemo is not called momon bailim. It's not considered the possession of the owner, as you see how restricted he is in what he can do with it. Ravina Masni, law asefa. Ravina teaches Rabbi Yochanan regarding the seifa of the Mishnah. And we go through, first we quote from the seifa of the Mishnah, I mean the Tanaic source above, and in a couple lines you'll see Rabbi Yochanan appears again as a commentary, but this time on the Sefer, on this section. Abu Yossi ben Distoy Oymer, Lo Omar ben Azai Elo Bevachor Bilvad. Abu Yossi says that Ben Azai said what he did only with regard to a Bechor. The arrow, by the way, that you see to the side of the Gemara text enables you to see where this quote is coming from the source above. So he is telling us that only Bechor would be considered Momono, his personal possession, and hence if someone else denies having it, falsely denies having it, he will be guilty of the violation of that type of oath called Shvuas HaShomrim. So what is excluded from Shvuas HaShomrim? Limute Ma'im Leimo Limute Shlomim. If you think it is coming to exclude Shlomim, that is unlikely. Hashtu Ma Bechor Shekadosh Meirechem Amonahu. Mind you, a Bechor that is sanctified at birth, even without the owner formally sanctifying it, it gains sanctity, and yet it's called your own possession, your own money, your own value item. Shlomim mibaya, shlomim, that isn't as holy in that sense. Shlomim becomes holy once you dedicate it, once you pledge it, not upon birth. So that it goes without saying that that would be considered mamono, and not excluded from Shvuas HaShomrim, not excluded from the realm of the false oath that might have been taken. Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mute Meiser. What Abba Yossi intends is to exclude Meiser from the realm of Mamono, your own holding. Ke Desanyo. And here we have the same source as we saw above. No need to explain it other than read it. Bevachor Nemar Lo Sifte, Venemar Venimkar Tam Chai. Ubalmum chai v'shochut, b'meiser ne'emar lo igal. A more accurate reading of that is lo yigo'el, and as a result of that choice of words in the Torah, lo eino nimkar, lo chai, v'lo shochut, lo tam, v'lo balmum. The Gemara asks, how can Rabbi Yochanan say regarding Abba Yossi, that as far as Mamono is concerned, the Shlomim would certainly be considered Mamono. Ha bivachor bilvad ko'omar. In the original statement of Abba Yossi, quoting Ben Azai, he said, by Bechor alone would it be considered momono? And hence, to suggest that shlomim would also be considered momono, that would not appear to be the case. Kashya. So this is left as a difficulty. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice Rava, and he is Roman numeral number 2. He is a throwback to that which we discussed in our previous shiur, when we were explaining what is meant by Nechosim She'ein Bohen Me'ila that was mentioned in the Mishnah. So Rava Omar, my Nechosim She'ein Bohen Me'ila. Nechosim She'ein Bohen Din Me'ila. Properties, items that don't have any relationship to the rules of Me'ila. Umay Ninu, what are those? Dehedyot, common articles. Question, Velisni de Hedyot, so why not say explicitly Nechosim of Hedyot? Why the convoluted expression of Nechosim She'ein Bohem Mila as a reference to Nechosim of a Hedyot? Kasha, so this remains a point of difficulty. We explained Rava at greater length in our previous Shiur. Rashi points out over here that Rava's point is as opposed to what we had in our previous year, the diuk, the inference that ein bohen me'ila, but they are nevertheless kodesh, they are nevertheless sanctified. Here, Rava is telling us no. The Mishnah is making reference to nechosim that don't have any connection to me'ila whatsoever. And hence, Nichsei Hedyot. However, if that's what the Mishnah's point was, as the Gemara said, it would have said Nichsei Hedyot. On the side of the Gemara, you will notice we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. A trapezoid or volcano shape appears. Number one, Shlomim Sheheziku. A Korban Shlomim, it's a sacrifice called a peace offering, before it's slaughtered. While it's alive, it commits damage. On Omid Beis, at the second line from the top, you notice again a trapezoid highlighting Toida Shezika, a thanks offering, a Korban Toda that commits a damage. The Gemara. Our note, I should just finish the note on this side, says, Mima goivim tashlum, when they do the damage, from what is the payment to be made? Omar Rebbe Abba, shlomim sheziku, a sacrifice, korban shlomim, that commits damage, goivim mibisorn ve'enoi goive meimurehem. Collection is made, the victim will collect from the meat, and the meat of this sacrifice, the innards, though, the emurim, those are the innards of the korban, that one does not collect from. Shita, that's obvious. Do I need Rabbi Abba to tell me the obvious? Emurim legavoa salki. The emurim aren't given to people to begin with. They are put on the altar and burnt. Legavoa means on high, literally, that's literally, means to the Almighty. They are set up on the Mizbeach to be burnt for the one who is on high, the Almighty. So, of course, the victim isn't going to collect from the Emurim, from the innards of the Korban Shlomim. What do I need Rabbi Abba for? Lo Tzricha, I need Rabbi Abba for the following. Ligvois mi besoron keneged Emurim. Now, we didn't mention before, but you're dealing here with an animal that's a tam. It's an animal that is considered still docile. Namely, it's not a shor hamu'ad. And as a result, it pays for damages one half of the damages. And it's specifically one half of what it is worth. So, as an example, Imagine the shlomim is worth $200, if it makes it easier to think in dollar terms. The meat of the shlomim is $160. Half of the meat value, then, is $80. Two halves, 80 and 80. The emurim of the animal is $40. 40 and 160 would give you a total of 200. Half the value of the emurim would be $20. 20 and 20, equaling 40. According to what Rashi explains, Rabbi Abba is telling us that the victim will collect his chatzi nezek from half of the value of the meat. The half of the value of the meat is 80. Half damages would be of a $200 animal would have been 100, but half the meat value is 80. The other the balance of that is in emurim terms, 20. However, we say you don't collect from emurim. Not only do you not collect from emurim, but you don't collect from the other, you don't collect $20 worth of meat from the other half of the meat value. So that not only do you not get the emurim, but you don't get a chance to make up the balance or the value of the emurim from the other half of the meat value. That's what this line means. We'll read it again. Lo tzricha, no, I do need Rabbi Abba, ligvois mi besaron, to collect from the other half of the meat, keneged emurim, corresponding to the value of the emurim that I'm not able to collect from. The Gemara asks, Ali ba deman, this ruling is in accordance with whom? Now here the Gemara cites the Shitos, the opinions of the Rabbonin, and two lines later of Rabbi Nosson, but background is necessary in order to appreciate this Gemara. So we glance at Rashi, at the last narrow line. I aliba de Rabbonin, de pligi ole de Rabbi Nosson, the Rabbonin who argue with Rabbi Nosson, de perek shor shenoge chasapora, in, let's say, one of the later prokim of our Masechta, Shor Shenogeh Chasapora, Gabi Shor Shedochaf Es Chavero Labor. One animal shoved another animal into a pit. Ve'amrinon Betam, and we say that if the antagonistic animal, the attacking animal, was a Shor Tam, Baal Hashor Mishalem Revi'a Ubal Habor Potter Vitnei Shezeh Hipilo. The Shor Tam would pay a quarter of the damages. The owner of the pit, according to the Rabbonin, is exempt because the pit is only, we'll say, residual damage as a result of the attacking animal. Uvemuad, and if you're dealing with a muad attacking animal, an animal that's demonstrated its undomesticated nature, it's no longer classified as a docile animal. So, Baal Hashor Mishalim Chatzi, the owner of the ox, will pay half damages. Ubal Habor Poter, the owner of the pit is exempt. Almo. We see, according to the Rabbonon, ki lek lishtume mi bal hashor, when you can't, when there isn't more to collect from the bal hashor, from the attacking animal, lo mishtalim mi bal habor, the owner of the pit is not held responsible. V'afal pi shebo nimtso hanezek, even though the victim animal was, at the end of the day, was found in the pit. According to Rabbonan, because of their exempting of the we'll say the second party, it would be obvious according to Rabbonan that no compensation is going to be made from the second half of the meat in correspondence to the emurim that you're not able to collect from. The Rabbonan say that just like they say in the case of the pit. Now, we should just add a word of explanation, even though we're not holding in the Perek Shor Shenogeh Chasapora yet. You might be asking, why in the case of the tam does he pay only a quarter of the damages when in general a short tam pays half damages? The reason for that is because in this case there's a, we'll say, a partner in crime. There's the owner of the pit, so that the owner of the ox can't be viewed as the exclusive source of damage. So since he has a partner in the damage, the Baal HaShor pays only half of what he ordinarily would have to pay. So if a tam would ordinarily pay half damages, if he was the lone damager, here he pays half because he has a partner, the owner of the pit. The only thing is that the owner of the pit, according to the Rabbanan, is exempt from paying. And hence, that being the Shitas Rabbanan, they say that if you can't collect from one, you don't collect from the other. And with regard to the Muad, the same logic follows. A Muad, if he were the sole attacker, then he would pay full damages, but here there's a boar that is a partner in the damage. So the Baal HaShor pays only half of what he ordinarily would have had to pay. However, as we indicated before, if the victim can't collect full damages from the Baal HaShor, he is not going to get the balance from the Baal HaBor. And as we said, the application here is that he collects from half of the meat value and does not collect the balance from the other half of the meat. That's the Rabbanan. So if we go and read this in the Gemara, we asked, the ruling of Rabbi Abba is Aliba Daman, in accordance with whom did he say what he did? That there is no collection of damage from the corresponding second half of the meat. So if you say, E Aliba de Rabbanan, if Rabbi Abba made his comment within the opinion of the Rabbanan, Pshita, that would be obvious. Ha Amri, they say, Ki leka l'shlumi mehai, lo mishtalmo mehai, when you can't collect everything you're expecting from the first offender, you don't collect the balance from the second offender. The E Aliba de Rabbi Nosson, and if Rabbi Abba's comment was in the spirit of Rabbi Nosson, then Rabbi Abba's comment wouldn't be accurate, because Rabbi Nosson says, in the case of the shor and the boar that were responsible for the damage of the animal, if a shor tam pushed another animal into a pit, so the shor tam will pay one quarter of the damage, and the owner of the pit will pay the balance, three quarters. In the case of a shor amud that pushed an animal into a pit, he will pay half damages, and the owner of the pit will pay the other half of the damages. So that the Gemara says, we go back to the Gemara, and it says, "V'aliba de Rabbi Nosson ho Omar," but Rabbi Nosson said, "Ki leko l'shume mehai mishtale mehai." When you can't collect all that you expect from the first party, you do collect the balance from the second party. So Rabbi Abba's comment, Rabbi Abba is an Amora. If his comment was within the Rabbanon, it would be too obvious. If his comment would be within Rabbi Nosson, it would be inaccurate. So where do we stand? Where does Rabbi Abba stand? The Gemara answers, note that we have a long answer. E boyesemo Rabbi Nosson, E boyesemo Rabbanon. In fact, Rabbi Abba could fit into either one of these Tanaic opinions. The din of Rabbi Abba might be in accordance with the Rabbanan, and we asked before, but isn't that obvious that you won't collect from the second half of the meat the corresponding value of the emurim? No, it's not so obvious. Hani mili betray gufi. That which the Rabbanan say that you don't collect from the second party, that's when you're dealing with two separate entities, like the shore, and the pit, and the boar. Aval b'chad gufa, but where you have an attacking shlomim, it's one animal. The animal is made of different parts, meat and innards and other different parts of the same animal. It's chad gufa. Motzi omar lei. There, the Rabbanan would concede and say, mikol hecha. And now what we're saying is, without Rabbi Abba, this is what I would have thought. I would have thought, since you're dealing with one attacking entity, one source of damage, the shlomim, motzi omar lei, the victim could say, mikol hecha debo inon mishtalamno, from wherever I want, from whatever part of the animal I want to collect, I demand payment. Now, as a result of that, Rabbi Abba comes and tells us, not so. So Rabbi Abba is necessary to counter the conclusion I would have reached on my own without Rabbi Abba. Iboy same or Reb Nosson. It might be that Rabbi Abba's comment is within Rabbi Nosson. Hossam, now what did Rabbi Nosson say? Rabbi Nosson said, if you can't collect from one source of damage, you are able to collect the balance from the other source of damage. That was in the case of the shor and the boar. Hossam, hu di omale baal shor lebaal habor. There, the owner of the dead animal can say to the owner of the pit, ano turoi, turoi is my ox, tor and shor, the tuf and the shin interchange. So turoi is the Aramaic version of shor. So my ox, bebircha ashkachte, I found my ox in your pit. And hence, look, you've got to pay. I'm collecting from the attacking animal whatever I can get out of him. The balance, you have to pay. After all, I found my animal in your pit. My delesli lishtulimi mehech, that which I can't collect from the attacking animal, mishtalimno minoch, I'm going to collect from you. So I can collect from him, in the case of a short tam, a quarter, because he, the owner of the attacking animal, had the claim that, look, I wasn't alone in this damage. There was a pit owner as well. So I'll pay half of what I ordinarily would have to pay. A short tam pays half damages, so I'll pay half of that. It's a quarter of the damages. If it was a short moor that was the attacking animal, the owner of the attacking animal say, look, I'm not alone in this damage where I would have to pay full damages, so I'll pay you my half damages. The balance is collected from the owner of the pit. So that's where Rabbi Nosson said his point. Avol, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Avol hocha, with regard to a shlomim that was mazik, mi motzi omar, could the claim be made, boser azik emurim, lo azik, that only the meat is responsible for the damage, and the emurim are not responsible for the damage? Rashi on the top line says, "Aval hocha mi motzi omar le al haboser nimtzo hanezik yosir min emurim," that the meat is more responsible than the emurim. That can't be said. Hilkoch shove chatzi hoemurim yafsid. Therefore, the half in value of the emurim is a loss. In other words, he, the victim, cannot collect damage from the corresponding value of meat that would have equaled the value of the emurim. I want to go over this contrast between the shor bor scenario versus the shlomim, that's the attacker. In the case of the shor and bor, Rabbi Nosson said, if you can't collect everything from the shor owner, you collect from the bor owner. And the logic behind that is that the victim can turn to the owner of the pit and say, look, as far as I'm concerned, the pit is the one that caused the damage. In my mind, your pit is completely responsible for the damage to my animal. Therefore, he has the power to collect from the owner of the pit. However, that kind of argument to say that the that only the meat of the animal of the attacking shlomim did the damage, and the emurim didn't do any damage, that is obviously false. The emurim are as much responsible for the damage as the basar is responsible for the damage. So the and since the emurim go lagavoha, their value in half of the nezek cannot be collected from the other half of the meat. Omar Rava, Toida Shezika Goiva mi Besora v'enoi Goiva mi Lachma. A korban toda is a sheep offering. It's a sheep that's offered as a thanks offering, and along with the sheep that's brought, there are 40 loaves as well. So Rava is telling us that when a korban toda commits damage, the collection is made by the victim from the meat of the korban toda and not from the loaves. The Gemara says lechem pshita. It's obvious that he doesn't collect from the loaves. The loaves didn't commit the damage. Seifa, it's the richlei. Nizak oichel basar. Umiskaper mevi lechem. The continuation of what Rava says is where you find the necessary information. Namely, that the victim of the damage that the Toda committed, the victim will eat the meat. The owner of the Toda is obligated to provide the loaves of bread. The Gemara says, Honami Pshita, that also is obvious. The owner of the Korban is the one that accepted upon himself the obligation to bring the sacrifice in the first place. And part of that obligation is bringing the 40 loaves. So what does Rava reveal to us in this statement of his? The Gemara says, I need Rava. Mahu detema. I would have thought without Rava, kevon de lechem echsher de zevachu, since the lechem, the breads, make the meat offering an acceptable sacrifice. It's a package deal. You have to bring the loaves in order for the meat aspect of the sacrifice to be acceptable. So since the breads enable the meat to be an acceptable sacrifice, lemole, let the offender, let the damager say, at achlis boser, you, the victim, you're going to be eating the meat. V'ano aisi lechem, and you expect me to bring the bread. Komash malon, the lechem chiyuva de baylim hu. What Rava tells us is that the bringing of the bread is the obligation of the owner. The Mishnah mentioned nechosim shehein shel b'nei bris. If property is owned by people of the covenant, by Jews, so if they're damaged, payment must be made. We have a double underline marking on the side of them under the mivneh, under the structural note, limute mai. We want to know what is the Mishnah in its respective phrases. Later we'll have another expression, nechosim hamiyuchodim. What is that coming to exclude? The triangle marking will be used to highlight the expression hokotani lo lekamon. The point that you say is excluded over here is a point that's taught later on in an explicit form. So what do I need our Mishnah for? As is often the case in Gemara markings, we use markings to show the repetitive style or balanced structure of given sugyas. Here you have a repetitive style phenomenon, and now we go to the Gemara text. The Mishnah had said, Nechosim Shein Shel B'nei Bris, if they're damaged, payment must be made. Limute Mai, who are we excluding by this? In other words, someone who is damaged, so there will be no need to compensate him. If it's coming to exclude idol worshippers, that if a Jewish animal damaged the property of an idol worshiper, so compensation need not be made. Well, that information, Hakatoni Lolakaman, that's stated explicitly later on. Shor Shel Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shel Oyvei Kichavim Potter. The animal owned by a Jew that gores the animal owned by an idol worshiper, the Jew is exempt. The Gemara says it's true. It says that later on. Tana, the Tana taught the idea in an unobvious fashion here. And Pahadim Meforish, and then later said, explained it explicitly. Nechosim Hamiyuchadim, Lumute Mai. Note, we have a new element in structure, and that is the diamond appears, and there's also a numbering scheme. So on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei, / Mivne heading, the diamond is used to introduce Gimel Tshuvos LaSheila, three answers to the question, Hadikotoni Nechosim Hamiyuchadim, Lumute Mai. The term of the Mishnah, Nechosim Yotim, what is that coming to exclude? The word Miyuchadim has as its root the word, say, Miyuchad or Echad, meaning singular or soul, S-O-L-E. So when Nechosim HaMiyuchadim are damaged, so restitution must be made. Limute mai, to the exclusion of what? Omer of Yehuda, limute, to the exclusion of a case where there is a victim of damage and there are two possible owners that caused the damage. To the exclusion of a case of Zeomer Shorcha Hizik, Vizeomer Shorcha Hizik. Two people are arguing, claiming that each other's ox is the one that caused the damage. Well, in a case like that, the victim is not going to be able to collect. The term of the Mishnah, Miuchadim, means that all the potential sources of damage are owned by one individual. Then I have no doubt as to his obligation to make restitution. You might have a person that has several animals, and I don't know which animal committed the damage. Nevertheless, I know that all the animals are owned by one person, so he has to pay. However, if I have a couple of animals that might have done the damage, but I don't know which one, and they're owned by different people, so they cannot be made to pay. The Gemara asks, Ha Tani Lekamon. But this information has been taught later. And it says later in the Masechta, Ha Yishnayim Roifim Acher Echad. Two animals were pursuing one. Ze Omer Shor Chizik, Ze Omer Shor Chizik. Each owner of the pursuing animals, and the two separate owners, is claiming that your ox is the one that did the damage. Shneim Pturim, they are both exempt. What necessity then is there in Rabbi Yehuda? I should say in our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yehuda's explanation, Nechosim HaMiyuchadim was to the exclusion of the case of Zeh Omer Shor Chizik VeZeh Omer Shor Chizik. But we have a Mishnah later on that teaches that explicitly. The Gemara says, Tani, our Mishnah teaches the principle, V'hoder Meforish, and then it is stated explicitly later on. B'masnisa tona, a second diamond, a second approach to trying to understand what does our Mishnah exclude when it says nechosim hamiyuchadim. B'masnisa tona prat lenichse hefker, to the exclusion of an unowned animal that commits the damage. Well, hechi dami, when you say that the unowned animal commits damage and no restitution will be made, what are the circumstances that regarding nichse hefker? I lema de nogach tura didon l'tura de hefker. If we're excluding from the need to make restitution a situation where my owned animal, I own it, damages an unowned animal. Well, man tov aleh, who's going to be making the collection? And it's obvious then that in that case there would be no restitution that needs to be made. Elo de nogach tura de hefker le tura didon. Rather, maybe it's a case of the unowned animal goring my animal, an owned animal. Well then, lezel velesi. Why would the Mishnah say in such a case that no payment is made? Let the victim, who was damaged by an unowned animal, let him go and grab it for himself as compensation. The Gemara answers, B'shekidem v'zocha boy acher. There was a damage that was committed while the animal was unowned, and some onlooker grabbed the animal after the damage was done. Oh, and now we say that the new owner does not have to pay. After all, when the damage took place, it was not his property, it wasn't his possession. Ravina Omar Limute Nogach V'Acharkach Hiktish Nogach V'Acharkach Ifkir. Ravina tells us that the expression Nechosim Hamyuchodim is to the exclusion of a case where damage took place, and after the damage, the owner sanctified the animal, or the owner declared it hefker, unowned. Tanya Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Yesera Kein Omar Rav Yehuda, Afilu Nogach V'Achakach Hikdish, Nogach V'Achakach Hifkir, Potter. A person whose owned animal committed damage, and then he sanctified it, or it damaged, and then he declared it unowned. The owner is exempt from making any compensation. Shenemar, Vuad Bivolov, Vehemis Ish Vechule. And from the positioning of the words in this Pasuk, this is of course only a fragmented quote of the Pasuk. The whole Pasuk we've included on the side, Perek Chof Aleph of Sefer Shmos, Pasuk Chof Tes. Reading the entire pasuk from the side of our Gemara, it says im v'im shor nagachu mitmol shilshon v'ad bevalav v'leish menu v'hemis ish o isha asher yisokel v'gam ba'olav yumos. So in this pasuk it said v'ad bevalav and v'hemis ish v'chulei. What do we learn from this? That payment will be made, restitution will be made, ad shetehei, and we skip the brackets for a moment, misa v'amodah b'din u'gmar din shoven be'echad, ke'echad. That means that the original death of the first victim animal, that's the misa, hamodah b'din, the court appearance, and the gmar din, the court ruling, all have to be under the single ownership of the original owner. If you don't have a single state of ownership from the death of the animal till the Gemar Din, then there will be exemption. And that would be the case if damage took place while owned, and then before the Gemar Din, the owner sanctified it, or he declared it unowned. We have a bracketed section that we skipped. There's a note on the side by the stars, B'Sogram Yesh Loshen Deboi Tikun. Within the brackets, we have an original version of the source that needs to be changed. We read the upgraded version. So now we go back to the bracketed section. Just before that, the Gemara said, Ach Tehei, the Pasuk that speaks about the culpability of a owner that whose animal causes damage, we say Achite Misov Amoda Bedin Shovim Kechad. It's until the ownership of the animal is the same at the time of the death of the victim. The Pasuk described the animal killing a man or a woman. So the ownership of the attacking animal at the time of the death of the victim. Ugmar Hadin. Let me read that phrase again. Misa v'amodah b'din, shavim kechad. The death of the victim and the court appearance have to be under one ownership. The Gemara asks, "Ugemar hadin lo bo inon," and the final ruling doesn't need to be under the same ownership, and there would still be culpability. That's not true. Ho hashor yisokel. The pasuk mentions, and the animal is stoned. Begemar din hu dichtiv. That's a reference to the gemar din, the final ruling. Not just the initial court appearance, but the final ruling. Begemar din hu dichtiv. Elo emo achite. Rather, the more accurate understanding of the halacha is achite hamisa v'mada bedin ugemar din shoven be'echad ke'echad. That there's one owner from the point of victim's death, a court appearance, and final ruling. If in the interim, however, the owner decides to declare the animal sanctified or unowned, then there won't be any compensation. Chutz mirshus hamyuchedes lamazik. The Mishnah said, as an exception for payment, no payment will be made if the victim had wandered into the domain, the property owned by the attacking animal, owned by the owner of the attacking animal. There is no payment, no restitution that needs to be made. The Omarle, the attacker, the owner of the attacking animal, can say, Turcho Birshusi, my boy, what's your animal doing in my domain? I didn't invite you into my courtyard and agree to watch your animal. You came in on your own, so that even though, and as a result of your coming into my domain, and my animal attacked your animal and caused damage, I don't have to pay for that. I didn't ask you to come into my domain. Urishus hanizik vehamazik. Omar of Chista, Omar of Imi. The marking that you see on the side, featured on the side, before we go further in the Gemara, a house shape appears, and on the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading, the two houses in opposite directions appear. Machlokes ha'im yesh chiyuv shein v'regel b'chotzer ha'shutfin. Is there a penalty? Does compensation need to be made in the case of damage done through eating, shein, literally the tooth, regel, through normal trampling, when the damage takes place in a chotzer ha'shutfin, a jointly owned piece of property? You'll see the use of a double underline to highlight the expression the hochi ka'omar. The Gemara. Urishus hanizik v'amazik. The Mishnah made reference to a piece of property that belongs to the nizak and the mazik. Omar of Chista, Omar of Imi. Achotzer ha'shutvin chayav bo al hashein v'al haregel. A jointly owned chotzer. If the animal of one of the owners of the chotzer, one of the partners, does damage, chayav bo al, does damage through eating or through trampling, he will have to compensate. V'hochi komar, and the Mishnah is to be read thusly. Chutz mirshus hamyuchedes lamazik de potter. We mentioned that earlier, that if the victim animal was injured, was killed in the domain owned by the attacking animal, the attacking animal's owner, the attacker is exempt. Urishus hanizik v'hamazik kishehizik chav hamazik. As Rav Chista said, when you're dealing with a rishus that's owned by the nizik and the mazik, when the damage takes place, the owner of the damaging animal will have to compensate. This is a function of what Rav Chista said. In a chotzer shutfin, there is obligation to compensate for damage caused through shein and regel. There's a pasuk that we need to cite. The pasuk says, "Ubiyer b'stei acher." Rav Chista is telling us that a chaser ashutfin, a jointly owned courtyard, generates the need to pay if damage results therein. Why is that? Because when the Pasuk makes reference to ubier b'stei acher, it causes damage in stei acher, the jointly owned courtyard falls under that heading. And it's not viewed as a public domain. In a public domain, damage that an animal does through eating or through trampling, through normal walking, does not generate the need for making restitution. But in a private domain, such compensation must be made. So when the Pasuk describes Ubir B'Sde Acher, animal wanders into someone's privately held property, there certainly compensation has to be made. What Rav Chista's Mechadesh to us is that even if it's jointly owned property, compensation must be made. There's a Rashi, Chotzer HaShutfin Chayev Bo HaKosuv, the Torah demands payment made in damage caused in a jointly owned piece of property. Al Hashem v'Aregel Imoch Lebemto Shozeh Peirosu Shozeh Dor Sal Kelev Chayev. If the animal owned by one of the partners damages the other partner's fruits, or the animal tramples items owned by the other partner, compensation must be made. The b'stei acher kurina be, it's referred to by the term stei acher of the pasuk. The lo havei kirushus rabban, it's not viewed as a public domain. The kol shekein al hakeren v'toldosav, and all the more so for damage caused by goring and its derivatives. The ho afilu b'rushus rabban nami chayev, in a public thoroughfare, even though it's a public thoroughfare, for keren related damage, for goring or unusual type damages, compensation must be made. The Mishnah reference to the domain owned by the victim and attacker, on that which follows afterwards. Rishus hanizak v'hamazik kegon chotzer hashutfin kishehizik chav hamazik, the jointly owned property, when damage happens therein, when it happens, so chav hamazik, the attacker, the damager, is responsible. Ubishenu b'regel komar, the Mishnah's intent is to hold responsible damage done through shein and regel. The bekeren lo itzrich lememar, there's no need to talk about goring related damage. Mind you, in a public thoroughfare where both parties have rishus, have permission to be, there nevertheless is guilt or culpability in the case of goring. The chidush is that a jointly held piece of property is not viewed like a public thoroughfare, where shein and regel are, in fact, exempt. So far, then, we see Rav Chista's approach to the expression in the Mishnah, Rishus HaNizik V'Mazik, as a reference to a Chotzer HaShutfin, and you take that phrase and connect it with the continuation of the Mishnah, Kishizik Chav HaMazik, when damage takes place, payment must be made. We continue in the Gemara. We have an inverted house marking, an opposite opinion. Rabbi Lozer Omar, a chotzer hashutfin, potter al hashem v'al regel. The chotzer hashutfin is exempt from damage, exempt from needing to pay for damage as a result of shein and regel. Rebbe Lozer views the Chotzer HaShutfin the same way we would view a public thoroughfare. The Hochi Komer, now his reading of the Mishnah. Chutz Mirshus HaMiuchedes LaMazik, no payment is made when damage happens in the domain of the attacking animal. Urshus HaNizik VeHamazik Nami Potter, and a domain that's owned jointly by the nizik, the victim, and the attacker, also is a domain in which there is patur, exemption from paying. What about the continuation of the Mishnah, the phrase ukishehizik chava mazik? That phrase is an extra phrase, lasuya keren. It's coming to tell us that a goring animal its owner must compensate for damage. The reason for the Rishus HaNizik Mazik being exempt is because it, according to Rebbe Lozov, does not fulfill the Torah's description of Ubi'er B'Steacher. According to Rebbe Lozov, Steacher would mean a domain owned exclusively, singularly by the victim, not a jointly held domain. Rashi adds, it's maybe obvious to you, regarding the damage done by goring, by keren, the unusual kind of damage in a jointly held piece of property, payment will have to be made. It's no more lenient than a public thoroughfare. At this point, you can see we have a bracketed section. And this bracket section is rather long. And if we take advantage of this marvelous marking, we will skip the brackets momentarily. On the side of the Gemara, we have a note indicating Sagraim L'Shem Diluk. These brackets are for skipping purposes. Kedei Lirois Miyad HaKushyo Al Rebbe Lozer B'Omad Abba. In order to see immediately the question the Gemara will be raising against Rebbe Lozer on the next Omad, on Yud Dalet Omad Aleph. So we heard Rebbe Lozer, who said that Chotzar Shutfin, there is exemption for Shein V'Regel. And now we skip. The Gemara asks, notice, we're on the sixth line from the top of Daf Yud Dalet Omad Aleph. Eini, is that so that there's a p'tur of Shein and Regel in a Chotzer HaShutfin? The Ha Toni Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef presents a Tanaic source. Chotzer HaShutfin Vapunduk Chayov Bohen Al HaShein VaRegel. Now notice what we've marked. We've dashed underlined Chotzer HaShutfin, and we've also indicated, we've highlighted with a slash dashed underlining Chayov, once again, on with a dashed underline Shein V'Regel. Tiyufta de Rav Elozer. Is this a refutation then from a Tanaic source on Rebbe Elozer? Omar Loch Rebbe Elozer holds forth. He has a response. We have a long marking. The Rebbe Elozer says, you're citing one Tanaic source that would appear to be against me, but I can cite to you a Tanaic source that argues on the source you just cited. If you drop down to the end of the framed section, you see on the last narrow line of the Gemara, Kotoni Mias, there is, however, it however says in the source that he cites, Chotzer HaShutfin Vabika Potter Bo Al HaShem VaRegel. Now, at that point then, Rebbe Elozer has a Tanaic source that supports him, supports his cause. So, with that, Rebbe Elozer is able to rest his case that if you're attacking me from a Tanaic source, I have a Tanaic source that supports me. That a Chotzer HaShutfin, a jointly owned piece of property, is exempt from having to make compensation for damages of Shein and Regel. The Gemara, however, asks, Kashi Adodi, but now we have two Tanaic sources that seem to be contradictory. We'll get back to that, Amir Tzashem, when we reach that point in the Gemara, to see what's the answer to that problem. But structurally, what I want everyone to see is that after Rebbe Elozer gives us his reading of our Mishnah, he did that by stating his point of view that Chotzer HaShutfin is Potter al Shein V'Regel. The Gemara there on Yud Dalid, Omen Aleph, asks at the upper part of the page, how can the Amora Rebbe Lozer say Chosar Shutfin is exempt when Rav Yosef quotes a Tanaic source saying Chosar Shutfin is Chayev? To that, Rebbe Lozer offers a response from a Tanaic source that supports his point of view that Chosar Shutfin is in fact exempt. With that, you get a feeling of the flow of the sugya, the logical flow of the superstructure of the Gemara. However, we naturally skipped quite a bit. So we go back to the bracketed section. Part of Rebbe Lozer's explanation was the rereading of the Mishnah according to his approach, and accounting for the phrase ukishihizik chava mazik was not a continuation of chotzer hashutfin, but rather it was an extra expression designed to include keren, that a person who owns an ox that gores, that does goring is of course an easy way out, but it means an unusual form of damage. We call this keren. That keren is something that an owner is responsible to compensate for. Do I need this phrase to include keren? Now what we have is a throwback to a discussion we had much earlier in the Masechta. The triangle that you see on the side is featured lasuye. The word lasuye means to include. De oisehen shel Rav u'Shmuel. We're going to see the opinions of Rav and Shmuel Behesper in explaining the expression chav hamazik, ma bo l'rabos. What does chav, kishizik chav hamazik come to include? So far, Rebbe Lozer said it comes to include keren. Compensation must be made. Do I need this Mishnah and the phrase chav hamazik to tell me that? So now we go in the Gemara and we say, Honi Chalishmo, yes, I need Kishizik Chav HaMazik to include Keren according to Shmuel. Why? Well, Shmuel, in reading our Mishnah at the very beginning of the Masechta, Shmuel had said that Arba Ovas Nezikin Hashor Vabor Vahmave Vahever, the word Shor was a reference to regel, an animal trampling, and the word mave in our first Mishnah was a reference to teeth eating. Is there any reference to an animal that gores that you're held responsible for? So Shmuel will tell me, yeah, this phrase, kishizik chava mazik. Elol Rav, we continue in the Gemara, diomar, Tana Shor v'chomili de Shor. According to Rav, however, the word Shor at the beginning of the Masechta, at the beginning of the Masechta, at the beginning of this Perek, the Arbovas Nezikin Azor v'abor, the word Shor includes all aspects of a damaging ox, including Keren. Chav HaMazik was Seimai. So what is the phrase Chav HaMazik going to come to include? And of course, this is within the approach of Rebbe Lozer. He doesn't read Kishizik Chav HaMazik as being a continuation of what was said immediately before. So what does Chav HaMazik come to include? Answer, Lasuye Hodeton Rabbonan, to include the following. Kishihizik Chav HaMazik, Lahavi Shomer Chinam Vashoyel Ezizocher Vasocher. These are four different types of guards, shomer, people that are entrusted with watching someone else's animal. Whether he's chinam unpaid or shoel, he's a borrower of an animal, or he's a nosei socher, he's a paid bailey or a socher, he's a renter. Shehezika behema birshusan. This section is going to might sound vague, and we're going to present it in a vague fashion because the Gemara itself has to ask, what are we talking about over here? So let's just read the words. The Gemara will clarify this in a few minutes. So the phrase Keshizik Mazik includes the case of one of the four Shomrim, any one of the four Shomrim, where damage happens in their domain. Tam Mishalem Chatzi Nezek Umud Mishalem Nezek Sholem. If it's a docile type animal, half damage. An animal prone to cause damage, full damage payment. Nifritza Balailo Sheputsu Alista Vyotsa Vizika. The fence holding in the animals was broken at night, or thieves broke in and the animal went out and caused damage. Potter. There's exemption. That's called oinus. That's beyond his control. Omar Mar. Now, what we have to do is clarify what did this source, in fact, teach us. It said, Keshizik Chava Mazik, Lovi Shemachina Vashel Nesisocher Vasocher, and it went on to say that the Tam will pay half damages, etc. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances? You'll notice a crown shape on the side. The crown is featured. Shlovim, stages, lahasbir, hadikotoni, lavi, shemirchina, vashel, v'chulei. Stages simply to explain this phrase, which is at this point vague. What happened? Ilema, the azge, turo, the mashi, latura, the shoyo. If one is to think that the tura is the shore, the ox of the mashil, of the of the lender, in other words, the borrowed ox. This is the tour de machio, is the ox of the lender. It's the borrowed animal, and it damaged tura de shoyel. It damaged one of the borrower's other animals, ones that he owned. And then you're telling me that the owner of the damaging animal, of the attacking animal, he must offer payment. If the animal was Tom, he has to pay half damages. Wow, lay ma lay, let the owner of the animal, who is the lender, let him say to the borrower, Ilu Azik Be'alma, if my animal that you borrowed would have damaged someone else out there in the wide world, Boyes Lishlumei At, you would have had to pay. I know it's my animal, but you borrowed my animal, so you have to pay if it causes damage to someone else. Hashta de Azke Lutura Didoch Boino Lishlumei? Now that the animal you borrowed from me damaged one of your own animals, I have to pay? So that's unreasonable. Elo de Azke Tura de Shayo Lutura de Mashio. Maybe this is what the source is telling me. The borrower's animal damaged the animal that he borrowed belonging to the lender. And what did the source say? That in such a case, if the borrower's animal was a short time, he could get away with paying just half damages. So can you imagine? You have someone that was kind enough to lend his animal, and this borrower, his animal, caused damage, he'll get away with paying only half damages. Lay-mo-lay, let the owner of the lent animal, who is in this case the victim, let him say, Ilu itzik me'alma, if my animal that you borrowed was damaged from some outside source, Boyes Lishlume Kulitura, you would have had to pay for the value of the entire animal. After all, you're a borrower. And a borrower is obligated even for oinsen, even for damage that happens beyond his control. Hashto di azge tura didoch palgo niska hu de mishalmisli. Now that your animal caused my animal damage, you think you're going to get away with paying just half damages. So we haven't made any progress in trying to understand the source. The source spoke about Arba Shomrim, including a Shoyel, including someone who borrows something. Half damages are going to be made when it's a short time. What's going on? Le'olam the Azge Tura Demashi Latura de Shoyel. The borrowed animal, the animal owned by the lender, caused damage to one of the other animals owned by the borrower. And you'll ask, how in the world can the Shoyel demand restitution? The Hocha B'mayaskinon Shekibel Olav Shmiras Gufo. We continue at the top of Daf Yud Dalid. V'lo kibel Olav Shmiras Nizalkov. The borrower says, listen, when I borrowed your animal, I accepted upon myself responsibility for any damage that might happen to your animal. But I did not accept upon myself damages that your animal might cause. That's what's meant of a lo kibel olav shmiras nezakov. I didn't accept any responsibility concerning damages that your animal may cause. And therefore, your animal damaged my animal. Your animal was an attacker, and I didn't accept upon myself responsibility concerning compensation that would need to be made on the occasion of your animal being an attacking animal. And now your animal attacked my animal. I want you to pay me. And therefore, this, and the source says, if the attacking animal was tam, the lender will pay chatzi nezek, half damages. If it's a muad, it'll pay full damages. The Gemara says, ihachi emos seifa. Well, if those are the circumstances, specifically where the borrower did not accept full responsibilities, unconditional responsibility. Well, what does it say in the Seifa? Nifrit saba lailo sheportsu alistim v'yotsu v'ziko potter. If the fence broke at night, or it was, or the area was broken into by thieves, and it went out and caused damage, so there is exemption. Ha b'yoyim chayov. But if damage happened by day, so then the borrower is obligated to compensate. But halo kibalov shmiras nezakov. But according to the explanation that we had given, the borrower did not accept responsibility for damages it might cause. The, when I say it, means the borrowed animal. Hochi komar. So we explain, thusly, the Mishnah is teaching me in its final phrase. Im kibel olav shmiras nezakov chayov. If the borrower, in fact, did accept upon himself damage that the borrowed animal might cause, so then the shoyel, the borrower, will be chayov. If, however, the fence is broken at night, or bandits broke in and it left the domain of the shoel and caused damage, he would be exempt from that. That's what we'll call an extreme form of ones for which he cannot be held responsible. So at this point, as far as the source that accounted for Kishizik Hava Mazik, what is it coming to include? So it's coming to include this situation where someone borrowed an animal and had accepted responsibility for damage that might happen to it, but did not accept upon himself responsibility for damage the borrowed animal might cause others. So in a case like that, the animal, if it's a tam, the owner of the animal, not the shoel, the owner will have to pay chatzi nezek. If it's a muad, the owner will have to pay full damages. And then we added, if, however, the borrower did accept shmiras nezokov, so then the shoel, the borrower, will have those obligations. And then finally, if the breaking of the fence took place at night, or bandits broke open and the animal escaped and caused damage, for that there would be exemption. The Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? Now, when we say, is that so, what in the world is that referring to? So we know already, because of our introduction and the use of brackets, that this is a throwback to Rebbe Lozer before. Rashi, in fact, points this out verbally. The second line from the top, Ad Rebbe Lozer Porach. We, in Gemara markings, demonstrated what Rashi says verbally. We did it visually. So the Gemara asks, is Rebbe Lozer's ruling really so that a Chotzer HaShutfin would be exempt from Shein and Regel? V'ha Tani Rav Yosef. This is going to be referred to as source Aleph. This marking will make it easier for us to navigate when we have to resolve what will appear to be a contradiction later. So Rav Yosef, he has a source that says Chotzer HaShutfin v'Pundik. Pundik is an inn. Chayov bohen al hashen v'al haregel. Tufto de Rebbe Lozer. This would seem to refute Rebbe Lozer. He had said that a chotzer that's owned by the nizik and the mazik, which is a chotzer hashufen, a jointly owned property, is a reason for exemption from shein and regel. So does this pose a Tanaic refutation of Rebbe Lozer? Omar loch Rebbe Lozer. Rebbe Lozer responds, Fetisbara. And he says, you explain yourself, Masniso lo pligi. Do we not have, in fact, a Tanaic controversy on this matter? And as a result, I have a Tanaic source to base my opinion on. V'hatanya, as you see in the following. Arba klolos hoya Rabbi Shimon ben Elozer Omer ben Ezekin. Rabbi Shimon taught four rules concerning damage. Kol shu rishus lenizik v'lo lamazik chayav bakol. Anything, any domain that is owned by the victim and not by the attacker. So chayav bakol means the attacker is chayav to compensate for all forms of damage. What Chayav Bakol in precise terms means will be the discussion of the Gemara later on. Demazik velo lanizik poter mikol, a domain that's owned by the attacker and not by the victim. In other words, you have someone who becomes a victim that wandered into the domain owned by an attacking creature. So there's total exemption from paying. The mazik is exempt with the claim, who asked you to come into my domain? Loze veloze, if it's a domain that's owned by both. Kagon chotzer ha-shutfin v'ha-bika. Bika is an open area in which there are many fields. Potter Boala Shein Vala Regel. There is exemption. So here we've got the key phrase dashed underline. Well, the Gemara comes back to this later. That a jointly owned a courtyard is a place of exemption for compensation made for damage by Shein and Regel. Al Hanagicha, Vala Nagifa, Vala Nishicha, Vala Ravitza, Vala Berita. for goring, negifa, a body shove, biting, that's neshicha, ravitza, crouching down, or bita, kicking, and all any of these unusual acts that results in damage, tam meshalem chatzi nezek mu'ud meshalem nezek shalem. And the fourth klal, the fourth rule, fourth area, lo lozeh velo lozeh, a domain that is not his nor his. It's Rashi says lo lozeh velo lozeh meforish lekamei di einoi shel shneam elo shel echod mehem shel nizik. This is not clear right now. The Gemara will deal with it later on, but for the time being, the translation is it's domain that's not his and his. Kagon chotzer she'eino shel shnehem. It's a courtyard that's not both of theirs. Rashi already told us the Gemara's explanation later on. It's a chotzer of the nizak. Chayav bo al hashen v'al regel. There is culpability for damage done by food being eaten or items being trampled. Al hanegicha v'al neshicha v'al negifa v'al ravitz v'al bita tam mishalem chatzi nezek muad mishalem nezek shalem. I think I've been alluding to the fact that the Gemara will deal with the details of this source later on. But what we have to do is focus on the main point, and the Gemara does it for you. Kotoni mias, it however says in this source, chotzer hashutvin v'abika poter bo al hashem v'al regel. This is what we saw from the outset. The value in a long marking is that if one read a lot of text and forgot, like, what's the point of this, you just go back to the beginning of the long marking, and you see that Rebbe Lozar was citing this source as a defense for his position, namely that Chosra Shutfin is exempt. Notice how we've used a special dashed underlining for word potter. That's the heart of Rebbe Lozar's point. Exemption in a case of Shutfin, Chotzer HaShutfin, for Shein V'Regel. Kashya HaDodi, should we now say that do we not have two Tanaic sources that are contradictory? This is, Rashi points out, and Rashi is the king of precision, and if you look at Rashi, he comments on this. He says, V'koporich Gemora. The Gemara asks. In other words, Rebbe Lozar, his comment finished right up to this point. He found, we'll say, support, if you like, to sound a little more poetic. He found solace in discovering or in presenting this source. That's fine as far as Rebbe Lozar is concerned. But the Gemara now is bothered. Kashya HaDodi. These Tanaic sources, namely the Aleph and Beis, the source that Rav Yosef cited, and this Beis source that Rebbe Lozar cited, are contradictory. What is the din regarding Chotzer HaShutfin vis-a-vis Shein V'Regel? The Gemara answers, Ki Tanya, there's no contradiction. And we provide an answer while at the same time maintaining Rebbe Lozar and his point that Chotzer HaShutfin is exempt from Shein V'Regel. But we have to understand things, and we'll say in context. Ki Tanya hi, the Beis source that indicated exemption, B'chotzer miyuchedes lozev lozev bein leperos bein leshvorim. It's a domain, it's a courtyard that is available, literally, miuchedes means literally it's reserved for, but it's available for the nizak and the mazik to bring their respective fruits or food items and their animals as well. They both have reshus, they both have permission to bring their animals there. Oh, in that sense, it becomes like a public domain. And a public domain, there is exemption for Shein V'Regel. We've mentioned earlier, the Pasuk says, Ubir B'Sdei Achir. Concerning Shein and Regel, damage obligation or compensation is made only when it's in a private type domain, not a public type domain. So when you have a domain that has the characteristics of a public domain, i.e., both parties can bring their animals there, there is exemption for shein and regel. Rashi says, "B'chotzer miuchedes lazev lazev leperus ulishvarim." The Havya Le Chotzer Hashutfin Lagabi Shein Lagabi Karen Hilkoch B'Shein Potter Rishus Arabim. Therefore, it's exempt for damage caused by eating, like a Rishus Arabim, Ubekaren Toma, and with goring type damage, Chatzi Nezek Rishus Arabim Mishalem. Karen Tama means if it's a docile type animal in a public domain, it would have to pay half damage. That is as far as source Bays is concerned. Why the exemption for Shein Varegel? Because it's available to the both parties, not just to the Mazik, but to the Nizik as well, to bring their animals there. Hahi, the Rav Yosef, source Aleph above, that indicated culpability, need for restitution in a chotzer hashutfin when there's shein v'regel damage. Bechotzer miuchedes leperos, both parties can bring their food items there. V'eino miuchedes leshvorim, but they don't have the right to bring their animals there. The Legabi Shein, regarding an animal eating fruits there, the animal shouldn't have been there. Havile Chotzer Hanizik, it's viewed like the domain of the victim. Now, what we've done with our markings was we indicated that source Bays is miuchedes l'shvorim, as well as fruits. In other words, animals can be there. Source aleph above, animals shall not be there. Daikonami, by careful reading of these sources, you can see that this is the pshat, this is the explanation. Dikotoni hacha, in the Rav Yosef source, Rav Yosef was the aleph source that indicated chiyuv. We have a little, we have a mark to this side, a squiggled arrow. You can align this with what we had above. It said, when describing the Chotzer Shutfin, it taught it along with Dumya de Punduk, similar to the Pundak. The Punduk is an inn. People do not bring their animals into an inn. And therefore, I understood that source Aleph was Eino Miuchedes Mishvorim. The Kotani Hasam in the source Bays, that began with the words Arba Klolas, Dumyo Debika. You see the star to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text? You can align it with the star above. And in that source, you saw Chotzer Shufin taught along with Bika. Bika was an open area of many fields. People graze their animals in a bika. So shma mina, this is conclusive that the punduk alluded to in the Bays source was a, as the Gemara explained, was a place that was miuchedes not only leperos but to shvorim as well. Hence the exemption from shein v'regel. Shma mina. Maskif Law Rebbe Zera. We have a new marking. This diamond is used to highlight the names Rebbe Zera and Abaye, and our hope is you'll find this marking very useful as we go on in the Gemara. So Rebbe Zera asks, Kevon demiuchedes leperos, a reference to Rav Yosef's source that said that Chotzer Shutfin is chayev for Shein v'regel. Since both have rishus, permission to bring their peros there, including the mazik, including the damager. In order for there to be an obligation for shame, doesn't it have to be bestay acher, which is mashma, which would indicate an area that's reserved for the victim alone? Why then, if it's described as miuchedes for peros, that both people can bring their peros there, why should there be in the Rav Yosef source, the source Aleph above, an obligation to pay for shein and regel? Omar le Abaye. Abaye answers, Kevon de'eino miuchedes l'shvarim, since it's not reserved for animal presence, animals are not to be there, stay achir karina bay. It answers the Torah's standard of being a stay achir. That's called stay achir, an area where animals are not to be, so that any food that's there is considered food that's been consumed in the domain of the nizak. Omale Rav Acha midifti the Ravina. Lema mi demasnisa lo pligi, amoroi nami lo pligi. Can we not suggest that just like the Tanaic sources, Aleph and Beis above, where the house markings appeared, they are not contradictory. They're not in conflict with one another. The Amoroi also, who are they? Rav Chisda and Rebbe Lozar. They're also not arguing with one another. Now, the reference to the Amoroim, of course, is if you go back to Yud Gimel Omid Beis, you could see that Rav Chisda spoke about a Chotzer HaShutfin as being Chayev and Shein V'Regel, and you can see Rebbe Lozar saying that a Chotzer HaShutfin is exempt for Shein V'Regel. Maybe they're not arguing, just like the Tanaic sources are not arguing. Rav Chisda, who spoke about Chotzer HaShutfin being Chayev on Shein V'Regel, it's because it was a Chotzer HaShutfin that they were allowed to both bring their fruits there, but no one was allowed to bring their animals there. And Rebbe Lozar, who spoke about an exemption of Shein V'Regel and Chotzer HaShutfin, is because it was a place that they had a right to bring their animals. So Rav Acha is asking Ravino, could we not say that? Omar Leyin? So answer, approach number one is yes, you can actually say that. They're not arguing. And if you insist on saying, or if you decide to say that they, the Amoraim, are arguing, I will tell you, Bekushya de Rebbe Zera, Ubepiruka de Abaye, Pligi. Their argument parallels the question raised by Rebbe Zera concerning he focused on the case of a chotzer that's miuchedes leperes v'lo l'shvarim, and Rebbe Zera wanted to claim that such a place should be exempt for shein v'regel, in that it's not a fulfillment of stay acher. And would one accept that point? And that's ubepirukad Abaye. Abaye's answer would be pliki, would be the point of controversy between Rebbe Lozar and Rav Chisda. What do we mean by that specifically? You take a look at Rashi. The Rashi we're looking at as the lower part of the narrow lines. Like we said, a chotzer that they have permission to bring just fruits, no animals. Rav Chisda that said that there's an obligation for shein holds like Abaye. Namely, that it's considered stay achir by virtue of the fact that neither one has a right to bring their animals there. The keva deinu miuchedes l'shvarim, stay acher karina bay, since they have no right to bring their animals, their oxen there, it's called stay acher, and fulfills the Torah standard for shein and regal obligation. For Belozar, who said there's an exemption to Rabbi Zeira, he would hold like Rabbi Zeira, keva the yesh l'mazik rishus ba'al l'peros, since the mazik has permission to bring his fruits there, lo karino beis, stay acher. You cannot refer to it by the term stay acher, and hence there would be exemption for shein and regel. So we have these two final approaches regarding Rav Chisda and Rav Elazar. Either you can say they're not arguing, they're dealing with different kinds, different situations of chatzar shutvis, regarding permission to bring animals, or they are arguing concerning that kind of chatzar that's miuchedes reperos and not lishvorim. Rav Chisda, who said chayav, takes the position of abaye, that it's called stay acher, and Rav Elazar takes the position of Rabbi Zeira in saying that it's exempt. It's not considered stay acher. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.